All right, should we call the meeting to order?
Please do.
Let's call the meeting to order. Meeting's in order. I'm trying to bring up the agenda and I don't have it.
Oh, I can
just guide me if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Should I read the little spiel and then get that over to you?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, welcome to our virtual meeting. We're going to cover a few basic items before beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or by calling the number in your original email. To members and city staff, members, if you're able, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. The chair and committee staff are responsible for muting and unmuting committee members. Use the raise hand feature when you'd like to be recognized to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. During any roll call, all panelists will be unmuted briefly. Staff, click raise hand when you are asked a question. The chair will do his best to call on committee members in the order in which their hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon and will be given 3 minutes to speak. The clerk will tell you when your time is up. After speaking, a member of the body may ask you further questions. If you need to share documentation with the board, please send it to the email listed on today's agenda. Please do not use your video. If you turn it on, it will be shut off. Cher, would you like me to do roll call?
Sure, go ahead, please.
Okay, Brock Woods.
I am here.
Kelly Kearns.
I'm here, and I apologize to all for missing the meeting last week.
Thank you. I've lost my place. Sean Gere.
Present.
And Michelle Probst.
Here.
Wonderful. Cher, we have quorum. The floor is yours, and I will get that agenda right on over.
Great, thank you. I'm actually looking at it. I just had a computer thing. Anyway, so did everyone get a chance to look at the minutes from last meeting? Can I get a motion to approve them?
I'll make a motion. Sorry, I'm on a phone.
Okay, Brock, was that a second? Anyone get a second?
Sure.
Great,
no,
thanks.
I'll second.
All right. Yeah, no worries. All those in favor of approving the minutes from last meeting, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? I can't see everyone. So anyone opposed? No one's opposed. Motion is passed. All right. Sounds good. Do we have public comment?
There are none.
Today? Okay. Sounds good. So does anyone have, I assume everyone's looked over the agenda. Does anyone have any disclosures or recusals? Okay, I'll take silences. No, so we'll move on to some business. Do we have meeting dates, potential ones? Do we have potential meeting dates? I don't remember seeing that for next year, this coming year.
Yeah, Natasha did send us some meeting dates.
Okay. I may have looked over and I don't have an issue personally. Does anyone have an issue with the meeting dates?
I'm good.
Can you review them quickly?
Do you have them, Sean? I got them up if you need me to.
Yeah, please go ahead, Chad. Thank you.
Yeah. February 11th, May 13th. August 19th and November 18th.
Does that work for everyone? Works for me.
Just confirming it would be the same time. If that works for everyone.
Yeah, just generally a Tuesday at 4:30. That works for me.
Okay.
Brock?
For me, yep.
I'm good.
All right, pardon me?
Looks like Michelle and I are good.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So Would you like to approve, anyone? Minutes?
I can put a motion on the table for approval of the meeting dates.
Sounds great. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
That's okay.
All right. So can we get, all right. So Michelle has put a motion on the table for the meeting dates. Can I get a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor of the meeting dates, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The motion unanimously is approved. So for the meeting dates, looks like we've got an overview. Who's doing that one, Chad, or of the Tree Keeper Tree Inventory website?
Yep, that's me.
Okay. Sounds good. Perfect.
Nicole, can you make me co-host so I can share my screen, please?
Sir, I totally forgot.
That's all right.
Chad. Should be set.
All right. Thanks. That gives me time because I thought I had Tree Keeper up and I must have clicked out of it. So give me 1 second here. Yes. Okay, can everyone see my screen right now?
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks everyone. Glad to be here with you tonight. And what I wanted to do is, as have that stewardship subcommittee is also Madison's tree board, I thought it'd be a good time to share the Tree Keeper inventory that we recently had done by the Davie Resource Group. So as you can see, I'm sharing the screen right now. This is the Tree Keeper website. So what is Tree Keeper? Tree Keeper is a tree inventory system that was created by the Davie Resource Group. And it is a cloud-based software system that can not only keep inventory of trees, but also has a number of other features that I want to touch on a few of them tonight. We will be using it probably on a somewhat limited basis, but it is already proved beneficial to us on tracking some of our tree plantings and additions and removals. So how did this come about? Well, this actually came through the recommendation from the Urban Forestry Task Force. Forestry, Engineering, and Parks received some money from the Urban Forest Special Charges to have Davie complete this inventory. Forestry has actually been using Tree Keeper for a number of years, and we are piggybacking, Parks is piggybacking on Forestry's account right now. Engineering, they did have some of their trees inventory as well, but you will not see those on the Tree Keeper system. They are keeping those in an internal city system. So what was inventoried? Well, what was inventoried is all right-of-way trees that the forestry maintains. So all the street trees were inventoried. In addition, there were, as I said, a number of engineering trees in some of their properties, and then a number of trees in Parks properties. So just to start out, I will say that this is not comprehensive. Representative of Parks, we did not have the funding to inventory every single tree in all our parks. In fact, we were given a dollar figure. We knew how much we had to spend, and we knew how much each tree cost to be inventoried. What we didn't know is what that would get us. Would that get us 20 parks? Would that get us 200 parks? Well, lo and behold, it actually got us closer to 200 than 20. So I think it was somewhere around 208 of our parks were inventoried. We started out by having them inventory all our community parks. we quickly realized that they were going to exceed that. So we moved on to neighborhood parks and then mini parks. So for the most part, almost all of our, what you would consider like a general park, almost all of those parks are inventoried. The trees are inventoried in turfed areas or landscape beds. And the natural areas, what we consider like the managed meadows. Once they got through all those, we started moving into some of the wooded areas, and that's kind of where it really slowed down, and we had to set some parameters on what they inventoried. So if you are looking at my screen right now, you'll see that we were able to get a good portion of Turville Point Conservation Park inventoried. I believe what the parameter we set was anything 6 inches or larger. So, there's obviously quite a few more trees in here than what you see, even though this is very densely packed. We didn't inventory any of the smaller stuff. So, to go over, just give a general view of this website. So again, like I said, this is a cloud-based system. And it is, this portion of it is publicly accessible. So I've heard that there's a link somewhere on the city website. I haven't been able to find it. I think it might be somewhere hidden in streets in the forestry section. But if you just Google Tree Keeper and Madison, Wisconsin, you'll be able to get over to this website. As you can see right now, up in this upper right-hand corner, I'm not logged in as a city user. I'm just a guest right now. So going over to some of the tools that you have available if you jump onto this website, there's Pointer. There's the ability to select and deselect not only rectangular or square areas, but I can do a polygon select. So as you can see, the pointer right now is showing me located at Goodman Park in my office. If I wanted to, say, select all the trees here in Goodman Park, I can do a polygon select and then create a polygon around the park. And then all those trees will show up. I can zoom in and focus on a particular tree also. If I point to this one tree, I'm still on polygon select. It'll show up as a swamp white oak with a 4-inch diameter in Goodman Park. If I zoom out, or if I come down to the dashboard here, I can get a diameter breakdown and a species breakdown of the parks as well. So if I click on the species breakdown for what I selected here in Goodman Park, it will come up with all the species in this selected park and the numbers. So American basswood, there's 6 of them, eastern cottonwood, 4, Northern Catalpa, 5. So there is also a way for me to have a more, I can do a more detailed description of what I'm looking for. I can actually search for like specific species or specific diameter and above trees. So I can deselect that entire area too. Tree benefits. This is something that, is generated by, it's like a third party system. This isn't something that, Parks created, but it is kind of a neat tool to see the benefits that, that you achieve through the trees that you've selected. I can build reports from a park species breakdown. I can have, I can export this to Excel also. I don't know if that's available for this generic public-facing site, or if that's, I think that's something maybe only I could do when I log in. And then the calendar is it's more a work order thing. So that's the public facing portion of Treekeeper. When I log in, it's very similar. It looks very much the same. Even the tools taskbar is very similar. Moving a little slow for me right now. Okay, so tools taskbar is very similar, layers, dashboard, tree benefits. Usually when I click on here, I'll click out of the row trees if they're on. It just gets too busy. Same thing, dashboard gives me some other things that I can, more options to break down. Data transfer is something that isn't on the public facing side. But again, as I said, you know, I can export some of this information to Excel. So we can do some data analyzing. Report builder, again, just more same thing, but with more options of what I can and can't do. And calendar and search. So there's a neat little fun follow me function over here where as we plant a new tree, our staff now have a tablet that they take with them, and as they either remove or add a new tree, there is a GPS component to it. So all they have to do is drop a pin where they've just planted a new tree, and it's it populates within the website. Let's see, what else is there? Tree benefits dashboard. Again, a lot of the same tools I have to be able to select and deselect. This again is, this is the add a point. So if I want to add a tree, it gives me the ability to do that. If I want to add one here in Quam Park, and I have the follow, you know, the follow me function. Right now it's following me here at the Goodman facility. And all I do is click on there, and I'm able to add that new tree. I don't want to do right now. So that's a basic overview of what we have. What are we going to use it for? Well, like I said, right now we're using it for our tree plantings and our tree removals. But we also feel that this will be a useful tool in the future to help us determine where we need to increase our canopy, how we're, you know, we're going to be able to analyze, you know, where maybe we're lacking in species diversity in certain parks. We really haven't dug into the data analysis portion of it yet. It's very new to a lot of us, and we are just starting out. But overall, we feel that this is going to be a beneficial for us going into the future. So, are there any questions? No questions. I thought for sure someone's going to ask me to do something I didn't know how to do. Kelly, you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I'm not going to ask you to do something you don't know how to do.
thank you.
I'm just curious as to how you're going to share this with the public. Is this something that you want the public to know about? And Like I could see an article going in the Cap Times about it, for example. Yeah. I think the public would be really curious about this.
Yeah, you know, I guess we don't have any, or I don't have any plans for that right now. It's already public facing, as I said, so anyone that wants to can jump on and see this data. But you know, that's not us actively promoting the fact that it's out there. There is some data, you know, we did keep the data that we were sharing with the public somewhat basic, just because there's some conditional analysis that went along with this inventory, and you know, we didn't want to share the fact that a tree may be, it was very basic conditional or health analysis, like poor health or fair health. Well, that doesn't say a lot. And you know, if there's 10,000 trees that are in, you know, they say are in poor health, we're afraid that suddenly we're going to get calls from the public saying, you know, there's a tree in poor health behind my house, you need to come take it down. Well, a poor health could just mean it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's ready to fall down. It just means it's not doing the greatest, you know, but still may live another 20 years for all we know. So we kept it just species and diameter public facing. And there's a little bit extra information that we have on our end of it.
Yeah, I think people would really be interested in it. They'd like to go and see what is that tree that's in front of my house and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can really geek out on some of this information, you know, like you start looking, you know, what's the largest diameter bur oak we have in the park system. You know, what's like when we were doing some training, some of our land steward techs wanted to know where are all the trees of heaven, you know, so we can go and remove them. You know, so we were able to look at that. So again, you know, it's still in its infancy as far as what we are going to be able to do with this website, but Forestry, who has been using it for a long time and really does all their work order processing through the system, they, you know, they've really kind of started to help us open up our eyes to what we can do with it. So, Michelle, sorry, was that everything, Kelly? Did you have any?
Yeah, that's okay, good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Michelle?
This is awesome. I know it was such a huge workload for all of you and across city departments, but great job. This is really awesome, really useful. I think you had mentioned this, Chad, at a commission meeting, but I think this would be something really beneficial to present to the Board of Park Commissioners, just because you know how much we get public concerns about trees and tree canopy and where we're at with the tree canopy and if there's ever removal of trees. And so this resource can kind of help us with those talking points of that. Yes, they're, you know, we understand the lay of the land right now and kind of where we're going, right? It kind of helps. It's that initial step to help guide us forward. I'm just really curious. I think under one of the tabs, I think there was a risk assessment or like tree risk or something.
Yeah. That was an option
to
have done, but we did not have risk assessments done on our trees. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious what that looked like, mm-hmm. but cool.
Again, kind of one of those, you know, worrisome details that, you know, they start doing risk assessments and suddenly, you know, where, you know, what does that lead to? You know, suddenly everyone with a high risk tree behind their yard, are they asking us to come and remove it? And, you know, we just felt it was better. Let's leave that one alone.
So. Yep. Totally understandable. Cool.
Well, but CJ and I did talk about, you know, I think our Our intention was to bring this to HSS first, yep. But I think there was some intention of me eventually coming to the larger core BPC and presenting to them as well.
Yeah. So. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Great. Awesome resource. And thank you all for working on this.
Thanks. Sean.
So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and call on myself. I'm kidding. But yeah, it also seems if you did do it, well, obviously the risk assessment adds a heck of a lot of time. So that diminishes how many parks you can do. But it seems to me that if you actually do a formal risk assessment, you would take on a lot more liability if there was a failure. Or if, mm-hmm. you know, and nothing was done about it proactively. So good call. That makes sense. Yeah, that was it, basically. And obviously, I'm going to geek out on this, although to be fair, you probably could have paid me and I could have told you from the top of my head, like 100
every parts, tree,
every single tree in diameters and heights, probably. So that's good. Although I did lead a tree walk in Turvel. And I keep forgetting to mention for the last years, but right at the entrance, there's a dead cherry leaning in another tree over the path. And this is the first 100 feet because I did kind of one of my classic tree walks where it was about an hour and a half long. We walked about 100 feet. So, yeah, less of a walk, heavy on the trees. But, yeah, and then there's a... That first 100 feet, they're dead ash, white ash, that the large ones that, you know, were declining and are now dead over the path and a lot of stuff right there. So.
All right. Well, good to know. Lucky for you, we have the person in charge of that park.
Well, I know. There call we go. Listening. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you, Paul. And I believe, does anyone have any other questions or comments for Chad? Brock, nothing? All right. Well, let's move along. Paul, and on that note, brings it to you.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Can you see my screen okay? Great. Sean, I think a few of those trees actually fell down in the last month or two, to be honest. Like every week we went to Turvel this year, there was something across the trail.
So, well, and right by the entrance, and this was Sunday, so 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
I mean, literally a big snag. Yeah, so just take a look in that first 100 feet. All right, you're up. Thanks.
And Paul, you're a little bit quiet. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, okay. That is that better? All right, so this is the habitat management plan for Kettle Pond Park. We're almost through our first drafts for all of our conservation parks. This is pretty exciting. I'll zoom right down to the map here so you can see what I'm talking about. The park's located between Old Middleton Road and University Avenue, is up to the northwest off the map here, and it's located pretty much due north of Owen Conservation Park, to let you feel for where we are in the world. So as the name implies, it protects the glacial kettle. And so that's where the pond comes from. And the pond is just this depression in the middle with the glacial kettle. It's surrounded by various things. A lot of the area had been part of a farm, and then the surrounding subdivisions had had orchards and other agricultural uses in the past. And so what has happened since the neighborhood became developed and since farming went away from this area, a lot of early successional species came in, both native and non-native. So the area got pretty choked with ash and box elder and a lot of honeysuckle and buckthorn and porcelain berry and all kinds of weeds in the site. So that's the history of it. What it has potential for and what it has a little bit of remaining or natural habitats, it has potential for to continue the prairie planting that was established on the north side of the park here on a south facing slope. Over on the east side of the park, there's some really large open grown white oak and bur oak trees. And so that's a no brainer to bring that back into oak woodland. It's a pretty open understory as well, relatively in there. The western part of the park is a little rougher. There had been a barn located on part of that, and so there's a piece of a foundation still. There's a lot of walnuts moving in, but there's also some hackberry, cherry, and a few different species of oaks there, red oaks and a couple of bur oaks as well. So that's another area with its current open overstory. It's a good place to try to plant a few more oaks and encourage an oak woodland sort of situation there in that part of the park. Right around the pond, there's a lot of more music species like silver maple, some red maples and things like that, trees that you'd expect to find along the edge of a pond. A little bit of emergent marsh and some sedges right around the edge of the, you know, the shallower portions of the pond right around the edge. So that all helps make the park pretty diverse and useful for wildlife. There's 90 native plant species documented from the park, partly due to the variety of habitats here. And there's 130 bird species that have been documented as well. It's a great like stopover site on migrations, and it also just has a lot of bird diversity because of the diversity of habitats and structural and different structure of the habitat as well. So probably the biggest thing here, so you know, like I mentioned, emergent marsh, pond, dry mesic prairie, southern mesic forests seem to be a good description for what parts of the pond park could potentially be. The biggest threats to the park are the invasive species, fire suppression. The park's only seen fire like about three times now, and that's a volunteer-led burn and the very small prairie planting that's in the north part of the park. So we hope to expand that to pretty much the entire park as we're able to get more native herbaceous species established, giving us fuel to be able to actually burn. So fire suppression is a big threat. Sedimentation isn't the threat it used to be, but it's still something to watch as the pond is, you know, drains the surrounding area. We want to make sure that any stormwater control structures are functioning and filtering out sediment before they reach the pond. Something that you would never guess by just looking at the pond, that it was actually dredged in the early 2000s because they students from UW and my predecessor Russ, they had measured 3 to 4 deep layer of sediment that had flown into the pond over the years from surrounding just agricultural uses, but also just sediment and sand coming in off of streets that surround the property. So there was a lot of work done to fix the drainage leading to the pond and install a catch basin on the southern end of the pond where some stormwater flows in so that it traps the sediment. And the pond was dredged to remove that layer of non-native material that had accumulated. They were able to do soil cores through that sediment layer until they got to the native older peat and muck layers that were naturally at the bottom of the kettle and had developed over time and actually keep the water in the kettle and keep it percolating out slowly. So that was a huge project. There's many more pictures on file here if you're really interested in seeing them, but pretty different from how it is today. And so this is when it was dredged in 2008, it was done in the winter time, so it was this huge, huge mess, but it resulted in lots of greenery and good stuff. So after relatively little management by staff over the last few years, several years since then, we're refocusing our efforts on it. We've been using some capital improvement project money to hire contractors to come in, start controlling the buckthorn. They've done some forestry mowing to remove the native or the invasive brush. And so it has become much more open. So here's an example on the bottom of the picture area that was forestry mowed that was completed early this year. And so it had a really robust response with abundant or native plants coming back. We've had a contractor working all year on Dame's Rocket, garlic mustard, burdock, porcelain berry as well, all the usual suspects. But we actually have a, you know, halfway decent native plant community coming in. It's spotty, so there's a lot of areas that have been dominated by those invasive weeds previously. And so one of our next steps is going to be adding native plants by seed, particularly grasses, to be able to give us a little fuel to start the cycle of being able to burn the site. And then we'll continue to engage volunteers to burn the prairie planting and improve the health of that as well. Where we're at, it's a pretty open area. It's got, as I said, it's fairly diverse for native plants, it's fairly rich for native plants. There's a lot of areas where they're kind of lacking. And so just improving that and making the whole preserve park a little more heterogeneous is what we hope to do. So over the next few years, we plan to keep the pressure on the native or the invasive species, install native seed throughout, get our herbaceous plant community growing, eventually start burning portions of the park unit by unit, and just working our way around the park through the course of 3 or 4 years, and just, you know, rinse and repeat. So the porcelain berry we expect to be a problem for quite a while yet. It's like at Owen Park, it's greatly reduced. It's no longer a lot of really large vines, but there's still plenty of seed bank, and so we're seeing younger vines all the time. But that's on our radar to go through and control those, mostly with herbicide treatments in the summer, so foliar spray. Almost all of the buckthorn has been eliminated from the majority of the park, and there'll just be follow-up treatments to woody resprouts and things like that. Next spring, we do plan to plant a few oak trees in the western portion of the park, both in the upland area near the parking lot on Norman Way, to get some mostly like white oak and bur oak in there, and then more in the southwest portion of the park. Skip to the map here. This is really lowland down here, and so this would be a good area. We're going to plant some pin oak as well. There's already a few swamp white oak growing in this area, and so just trying to replace tree canopy that's been lost here just through like disease and storm damage, because this area is actually quite wide open right now. One of our big goals is to make sure we retain the native shrubs that grow all around the pond. There's a lot of, I believe there's some bladdernut, but there's a lot of musselwood, red earth or dogwood, silky dogwood, plants like that, ninebark, buttonbush. Provides really good cover for birds, and so it's a good part of the habitat. So it's just a matter of making sure that we keep the buckthorn out of there so it doesn't displace the native plants that grow around the pond. Pretty straightforward. It's a small park. It's only 8 acres. Part of that is the water in the pond. We will keep an eye on, we'll control reed canary grass and kind of keep an eye on the cattails to make sure they don't take over. They seem to be stable right now and not encroaching through much of the rest of the pond. That could change if water levels change over time. So that could be a climate-driven change that we might have to adapt how we, our threshold for management for those. Other than that, hope to engage a lot of volunteers to work, work on things like garlic mustard and Dame's Rocket, which are really, you know, good species for volunteers to work on for hand pulling and stuff. We'll still use herbicide to remove the species quickly over the course of a few years, hopefully. Yeah, not sure what else to say about it. Pretty small park, so estimated annual budget's only around $14,000 to be able to continue to do the things I mentioned. Hope to get volunteers and staff perhaps involved in monitoring. We'll do some transects through the park to track our restoration and see how the plant community changes over time. And that's it. Any questions? Yep, Kelly.
Well, first, kudos to your staff, the volunteers, and the contractors. The park looks so much better than it did a number of years ago. It was a mess with that porcelain berry like everywhere. Yeah. So good job on getting it kind of cleared out. I'm wondering if you are working, if you're notifying the adjacent landowners about this. I'm assuming there's porcelain berry in at least some of those yards adjacent. Are you working with them at all to try to encourage them to remove some of their invasives?
We are not actively right now, but like I did with Elvium, which had a new management plan for it, it might be helpful to do like a guided hike for the neighborhood and show them what we're doing and start that discussion. So I'll
yeah, that'd be great.
Put that on the plans for next year. So. Sean.
Hey, so is there a friends group for that park, do you know, or?
There's a volunteer, oh crap, his name escaped me, Josh Solomon.
Okay.
Happens to work for Stantec. He has led the effort to do a few controlled burns there with some neighbors.
Okay.
Volunteers from the neighborhood. There had been a guy that volunteered there for years and years, and he finally retired because he got older and not able to sling the chainsaw as easily. He did a lot to remove box elder from the park and work on the honeysuckle and buckthorn as well. So that probably wouldn't be as good as it is now without his years of efforts. So.
Okay, cool. So, but not a formal friends group or anything yet?
Right.
Okay. Cool. I love that park. So that is a fun little gem. I just kind of stumbled upon it one day, you know.
Cool, yeah.
And I love Madison surprises, even though I've lived here for 34 years. That's cool. I did a couple more questions too. So pin oak, like palustris, I assume, or?
Yeah.
Okay. So is that like the nod forward looking to more southern species? Is that the idea?
Somewhat, yeah. And this one particular area in the park is it's just really low in elevation, and so
right,
yeah, it's just wetter than the rest of the park,
right?
Yep.
Just because I mean obviously it's technically it wouldn't be considered a native, so right. Okay. And but we do have northern pin oak, but you know, I'm guessing you don't plant that very often.
No,
I've never seen it available. So
many trees very often in the conservation parks, actually. It's been
okay.
Well, at least, you know, during my time here, it's been a lot of focus on just making room for new trees. And so
we're makes sense.
Starting to get to that point in a lot of our parks. So we ordered a handful of bare roots for the spring that we hope to put in some areas where we've opened up the canopy in our
openings,
all around. So,
all right. Well, a bright spot. Luckily, porcelain berry is edible. Doesn't taste good. I mean, it doesn't taste, it's actually not bad, but actually the you can cook the leaves and stems too, like, you know, like garlic mustard.
All right. So cool.
Maybe there's some sort of food venture that I'm kidding. But I will pass along one thing too, is that I worked with friends at Starkweather Creek, and so we just had our annual meeting. And Jeff Steele does a lot of work in the woods with honeysuckle and buckthorn and things like that. And when it came to him to talk about garlic mustard, and you know, they had a restoration day on Saturday. And so just doing a lot of work. And when it came to someone asked about garlic mustard, and he said, yeah, you know, we came out this summer and we couldn't find any. And those words I have never heard Generally, it's, oh, it's a work in progress, or, you know, we're still working on it. Yeah, so right. I just thought I'd pass some optimism your way, you know? Nice. can happen, so.
Cool.
Yeah, and we are having, you know, obviously it's more maintenance, but good luck with, you know, the high pruning method for buckthorn removal. So, but, you know, we can get active groups out more often. So that's a plus. So no, you know, herbicides. So any other questions or comments?
This is Brock.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Couple quick things. Back in the 90s, I had looked through your species list today, and back in the 90s, I actually saw some Trillium grandiflorum in that park. I didn't see it on your species list, so I was always keeping an eye out.
Okay, yeah, I will.
And we, at one time, a couple of us had seen prothonotary warblers down there.
Oh,
hopefully
wow.
With the increase in quality of the site, maybe we'll get some of those guys back, along with the rails. We hear rails there pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Okay. One comment and two things. One is when the railroad got regraded, at one point there wasn't much garlic mustard in the park. When that right away got regraded, that whole side of the railroad all came up in garlic mustard. It's very disappointing to see that happen. This had to be back in the 90s sometime too, I guess. I don't know. I used to live in the area, so I used to get into there with some regularity. And a quick comment to draw Kelly in. Speaking of garlic mustard, Kelly, have you heard anything at all about anybody else in the Midwest, like they have in the East, start to see their garlic mustard decline on its own? And in the context, Sean, of your comment about garlic mustard being gone from another park or area, I'm curious if that was due to all of their hard work or a combination of their work and, I don't know, this sort of unknown factor, at least as far as I'm aware, of what was causing its decline in the East. So, Kelly, jump in here if you know anything more about that.
Yeah, so we occasionally hear of spots where people have seen it like decline dramatically. And it's usually in areas where people have been doing control work, because the people who aren't doing control work generally aren't paying that much attention to it. And so we don't know if control has anything to do with it. Out East, they basically have told us that the folks at Cornell have been saying that if you leave it alone, it eventually will go away on its own. But we certainly have not seen that on a wide scale at all yet. Certainly just a few scattered places like what Sean mentioned. But, you know, it's definitely something that maybe isn't worth putting as much effort into as some of the things like buckthorn and porcelain berry that are probably impacting a broader number of species.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, years back, I tried to get Bernd Blossy to send us a soil sample so we could infuse it into some spot, and that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. Is there a biocontrol available for garlic mustard?
Not yet, as far as I know. Not in Wisconsin. Not in the U.S.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, they're looking to see if there are various fungal pathogens that are killing it. I don't think anything has come out as far as like any kind of a research paper or anything yet. Not that I've seen.
Yeah, that was my thinking. I just wanted to touch base with you. You probably keep up on that particular species more than I do.
Yeah, and I would say
beautiful park, though.
Yeah, the Starkweather Creek efforts were definitely cultural. A lot of pulling often. So
yeah,
and okay. You know, we'll see this year. So or this coming year.
Okay.
All right.
Well, dry fall.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Dry falls can also influence it dramatically. So yeah, it might be low. It might be low all over next year because our fall was so dry.
Right. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Yep. Well, Paul, this is a beautiful little park. Thanks for all the work. I'd love to see it blossom. And it's a big resource for all the people who live around it. So That's really good. And I wanted to point out when Chad was talking, I think the tree inventory, as Kelly pointed out, would be very valuable for a lot of landowners. I know I talk to landowners from time to time and about what's on their terrace, and they don't have a clue as to what's there. And sometimes if they knew, they could do some things in the understory to help out some of our native insects, especially with our oak trees. I have a couple now on my terrace, and I'm hoping to underplant some of that with some native things and give the larvae of the hundreds of different insects, basically butterflies and moths, that can occupy our oak trees a chance to overwinter that they can't do if they drop into bluegrass lawn. So I think it'd be really valuable for people to have access to what trees are in their terrace.
But
that's all.
You would do that after you get a permit, right, Bach?
Sure.
Planting? I'm kidding. Well, I mean, I'm not kidding. But... No. Unless you live on the east side of Madison, then you just go for it and no one enforces that one. Which personally I don't have a problem with, so which is good, and that is a good idea. But yeah, and I run across all the time people very interested in what, you know, is on the terrace for them. And of course, on occasion they say, oh, could you just do a little pruning over here? Or no, that is not the way it works. So all right, fair enough.
Yeah, any other thoughts? I talked to the foresters already about underplanting. So
right. Any other thoughts? All right. Well, beautiful as always, Paul. Thank you very much. Next item, and I'm guilty of this, but I guess it's a reminder that the annual statement of interest is due. I have not filled mine out yet. So just a friendly reminder for everyone else.
And just to ask, how do we get that? How do we access it?
I think it was emailed out. It's on... I think it's on Legistar. I'm sure it is.
And if they don't hear from you, they will email you.
We lost you, Brock.
I think Brock said that if they don't hear from you, they will send an email out.
Kelly, if it helps. It came to me on the 22nd of November.
Hmm.
And it came from clerk at City of Madison. If that helps.
I may have it. I'll look.
Just a friendly reminder. I think that's about it. Any other thoughts, comments? Any motions you'd like to make as far as adjournment?
If we're done, I move we adjourn.
I second.
Perfect. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean.